Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Reality Interactive, helping your business create seamless and memorable digital experiences for your customers. Find out more at realityi.com. Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, here to help individuals and families affected by gambling-related harm. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit our website at ccpg.org. Thames at Mitchell College, a holistic on-campus program that helps high school graduates prepare for college through personal transformation. Go to mitchell.edu/Thames to learn more. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by Leapfrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. They're called the Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region or Sector. But what do they do? Why should your business be talking to them? And how are they helping grow the region's economy? Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. They're one of those organizations whose name you've heard mentioned at business networking events, or you've even seen their logo on finished project boards around Southeastern Connecticut. But just who and what is the Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region, or Sector, as it's more commonly known? And what do they actually do and for whom? And how are they connected to the state's new nonprofit organization called the Connecticut Wind Collaborative? I sat down with Sector at their offices in Groton on the bank of the River Thames to talk to them about their services and resources, and it just so happened on the day of my interview, Paul Lavoie, the state's chief manufacturing officer, was visiting, and we touched on his new project with Sector, the Connecticut Wind Collaborative. My interview starts with the executive director of Sector, Paul Whitescarver. So Paul, tell us a little bit more. Executive director of Sector, it is the Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region. What exactly is Sector? Because a lot of people will have heard about it. It's been around for a while, but you've probably got people going, and what do they do?
Yeah, so Sector's been around since 1987. That's where we were incorporated. And it was really, you know, when they came up with the idea of the Council of Governments for the state, because we don't have any county governments, this region decided to say, okay, let's have an economic development organization that's separate from the Council of Governments. And it's kind of grown. We've had three different names since 1987. Sector's the one that it resides in now. But the big thing for us is that we coordinate with all 22 municipalities in our Council of Government geographic region to try to think regionally how we can develop economically, whether it be, you know, housing development or manufacturing, how about childcare and childcare deserts or healthcare. You know, Sector participates in just about every sector of the economy that impacts Southeastern Connecticut. We develop a comprehensive economic development strategy that allows us to get grant funds from the federal government, or we can do that in association with the 22 municipalities. They give us funds to match those grants. We also work a lot with DECD, not just in developing the strategy because it has to be approved by the state and then approved by the federal government, but DECD has also helped us when it comes to small business, either whether it be grants or loans. We're currently participating in a program called Sector Rise, which gives small business loans up to $20,000 currently, but we're going to increase that. We're kind of refolding that to get second-tier type businesses. We also participate in the Boost Loan that is part of DECD. You know, to date, over the last 9 months, we've given close to $600,000 in small business grants and about $1.2 million in Boost Loans. And then we also participate with the EDA in revolving loan funds for those businesses that might not be bankable. You go to a bank and they say, I can't really support you. You don't have the cash flow or the debt service ratio that's associated with getting a conventional loan with a bank. Why don't you go talk to Sector? They might be able to help you. Or we can actually partner with that bank. Maybe you're looking at the capital stack where the bank can only do so much and Sector can do the other piece. You know, so that's one of the things that we participate in the region. And we've been doing that for almost two decades with the EDA. EPA and also with the state.
Just for clarification, you mentioned DECD, Department of Economic and Community Development, just for the listeners in case they're wondering. We just want to make sure that they understand the obviously the organization and the agency you're talking about. Talk to us a little bit more though about what makes you different, and certainly when it comes to the loans, what makes you different than, I know you sort of did touch upon it, that you may not be able to get money from a bank, but what does make you different from a bank though, you know, if people can actually get bank loans? Because I mean, I read somewhere, I think one of the loans is like a 4.75% interest rate, which isn't bad.
It's actually 4.5%, and that's the boost loans through DECD. That was a $50 million tranche of funds that the state put up. It's not just sector that provides. I think there are six other organizations that can provide that throughout the state. We decided at sector that we wanted to stay in our geographic region because we have a personal commitment to the people that are the businesses that we work with. It's a little bit more, I don't know, warm, I guess you would say, that you can actually reach out and have a, if you needed to have a daily conversation with somebody that you gave a loan with, that's what we wanted to be able to do. And we've kind of always been that way.
Is it more about wraparound services then for you? Because I mean, I know banks can do that as well, but I mean, of course, you know, whenever you take a loan out, there's fees and all that sort of stuff. So I think one of the things that I read that there was no origination fee, which that can be quite a large thing, you know, on a loan. So is it more about this, like the holistic experience, as it were?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so part of the thing that DECD provided us with our grant program was more capacity. So I actually have a business retention expansion specialist. I actually have a business technical assistance person. You know, if a business, let's say they come in and they don't understand their balance sheet or, you know, what debt service ratio or what cash flow, you know, I got a person that can actually sit down and work with them. Or maybe if I don't have the capacity, I can send them to SCORE. I can send them to SBDC, the Small Business Development Counselors that are here in the state. You know, so I think sector provides that in a much more friendly manner because we know all the municipalities. We do a lot of referral from people like NCDC and Kevin Brown up in Norwich, and we work with Felix over in New London or the people in Groton. I mean, it's a business that is already part of the community, and it's the community that's assisting them. I just think that's a better way to do business.
And Paul, let's get back to you. Your involvement with sector. Talk to us a little bit, obviously, about, you know, some of the interactions that you've had with sector.
Sure, absolutely. So Paul's right? The best thing you can do is to really do it on a local basis and to really take a look locally how we can drive economic development. You know, every region of the state, even though we're a small state, there's a lot of differences and there's a lot of, you know, there's different industries, there's different focuses and things like that. So it's important to do that. From my perspective, when we looked at the Connecticut Wind Collaborative, it was a natural choice for us to work with sector. I mean, we needed somebody to run the back office operations. We didn't want to do that. The state isn't going to set this up. We needed to find a partner to be able to do that. And because they're so entrenched here in the Southeast region, it was a natural choice. And then we're looking at, you know, they're going to help us as we continue to build out the supply chain. You know, they have grant programs, and then the state has grant programs for manufacturers that we can really look at supporting manufacturers as they look to become supply chain companies for the offshore wind industry. So it's a really true partnership with sector DECD. But when you start to really take a look at industry in this area and manufacturing in this area, it just makes a lot of sense. They know the local landscape much better than I do, and they can do the outreach. We have limited resources at the state level to do outreach, and the local organizations have a great, much greater ability to do that. So it's a great partnership.
Paul, let's get back to you. As I've said, executive director of sector. Why did you want the job? Because before this, you know, you had a very long and illustrious naval career. I think you took retirement. Is that correct?
It was after 39 years of being in the service, you know, so it was time for a change.
Sure.
You know, my time at the base as the commanding officer, I developed a lot of relationships with the local municipalities, just about every first selectman and mayor, you know, I had dealt with. The Chamber of Commerce I dealt with as well, you know, so I had a relationship with people. And at the time, sector was looking for an executive director. And, you know, I might be trained as a nuclear engineer for the Navy and commanded a submarine, but believe it or not, my undergraduates in economics and my graduate work, although in national security, was really about economics, you know. So this was like a dream come true for me that I could actually use what I was trained for in school 30 years ago to be able to come back and actually do that kind of work.
Since you've been the executive director, what would you say are some of the things that have really been a highlight for you? I mean, obviously the Connecticut Wind Collaborative, I'm sure, is one, but is there anything that's like strikes you immediately? Because I'm sure you've helped quite a few businesses. In how long have you been executive director now?
Almost 2.5 years. I would say that when I got to Sector, not a lot of people knew about Sector, and to see its brand slowly grow to where we're, you know, people are actually understanding what we can do. You know, if you looked in our past, we were big into the Base Realignment and Closure Commission. We were instrumental in making sure that the base was saved back in the early 2000s, even in the early 90s. I think we've been through 3 BRACs with the base, and we've been able to save it. So,
sorry, when you say BRACs again, just for the listener, what does that
base
mean?
Base Realignment and Closure. And when you look at Electric Boat, that's right next to the base. You know, the base and Electric Boat account for probably, I know, a little bit over $8 billion of economic impact to this region. You know, so to have understood that, I think, is another reason why my presence here at Sector has assisted Sector's brand or its name recognition to grow, since we haven't had a BRAC in almost two decades.
Do you often get a little bit annoyed, though, even now? I mean, the figures you've quoted are huge. We know we've got capability. We know we've got these industries. Do you still get a little bit annoyed that people seem to think that Southeastern Connecticut and Eastern Connecticut just aren't the places to do business?
You're separated by the Connecticut River, right? So if you're on the west side, you're a Giants fan. If you're on the east side, you're a Patriots fan. And it's probably been that way forever. It doesn't really matter, you know, how far back. If you go back to the early 1600s or the middle of the 1600s, there's always been a divide right there at that river. If you're on the west side of the state, you're more about finances and financial institutions. If you're in the middle of the state, you know, aerospace industry. Mm-hmm. And if you're on the eastern side of the states, we're all about submarines. Just the lay of the land, I guess, so to speak.
Some of the businesses that you have helped, as I say, in your 2.5 years, just talk to us about maybe a few of them, because I'm guessing they're of all sizes as well, because Sector deals with sort of, just give us a quick sort of like sense of how big or how small. I mean, can it be as small as like a single person operation? I mean,
absolutely. You know, we gave a loan to this company, Forge 41. It was a small manufacturer that essentially made small parts and pieces to help and assist a defense industry that needed those small pieces and parts for whatever they were making. And he was a startup. You know, so to be able to do that for somebody that wanted to get in there. And, you know, I got to put another plug out to another part of Sector. We support the Apex Accelerator, which is statewide, and that whole program is all about government contracting. You know, so if you are a small business like Forge 41 that wants to get in the defense industry, you don't know how to do it, the Apex Accelerator counselors that are across the entire state are where you go to figure out, okay, what kind of paperwork do I need to fill out with the federal government, SAM.gov, or, you know, maybe I don't understand the contracting piece, or maybe it's cybersecurity that you don't understand. What are the requirements for cybersecurity before I can get into a DOD contract? You know, the Apex Accelerator counselors can assist with that. You know, so that's also been a part of Sector. And believe it or not, we get funds from DECD and the federal government to support that. You know, so, you know, our relationship, I think what people need to understand is we're not only, you know, a federal place where you can receive funds, but we do a lot of work with the state as well. That relationship, I think, has grown in the last 2 years, which is another thing that I'm very proud of. And to be honest with you, that growth started with offshore wind in our Build Back Better Regional Challenge grant submission.
Also, the region just recently got an innovation center, the Eastern Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. I'm guessing you're working with them as well, because that would seem like a good tie together.
Absolutely. The Eastern Connecticut Chamber of Commerce and Tony Sheridan's group, we work hand in hand with. He's on my board of directors. Anything that, you know, I've always told every chamber, and there are a lot of chambers here in Eastern Connecticut and all over the state, I want to see all the chambers be successful. You know, so it's not just one that we pay favoritism to, but all. But I would tell you that the Eastern Chamber and the Innovation Center there, I think what he had in mind to do that and put it in New London was a great thing for him to do. And let's not forget that the Eastern Chamber actually did one of the first offshore wind studies for the state. You know, so we're kind of invested in offshore wind. I mean, you know, when the state puts $330, $350 million investment in-state peer, we ought to be. And it's a great way to diversify the economy.
Now, one of the other things that you've done is you've had a very nice video put together for Sector, which, of course, is never a bad thing because we all like to watch things and it certainly helps to get the message across. Talk to us about, you know, how that came about, why you decided to go down that route, and how's that been received?
You know, we've been working with Quinn and Harry, which is a local, you know, marketing brand group here in southeastern Connecticut. And the other thing that I do is that I'm the president of the Thames River Heritage Park. And that looks at the history of the river. And one day I was talking to the guys at Quinn and Harry, and I said, wouldn't it be cool if we created a video that kind of put it in words and visual that showed everybody the significance of the Thames River? You can start at the mouth of the river and go all the way to Norwich, which is 17 nautical miles, and you can just pick whatever industry you want to think about when it comes to the blue economy. We're doing it. You know, you can start at Avery Point in University of Connecticut and the work that they do there. You move up the river, even there is Project Oceanology. We have a marine science high school that does work. We have the Coast Guard Research and Development Center. Look at Electric Boat and the amount of facility work that we've done there. It's $1 billion with that building for the Columbia-class submarine. And then you look across the river and you've got $350 million investment in State Pier. You go a little bit farther up. You've got Mohawk. You've got the tugboat companies, Thames River tugboat companies that are up and down the river. In fact, you know, the naval base has been doing business with the tugboat company because we have to have 24/7 coverage for these nuclear reactors that are on these submarines in case we need them for an emergency. Keep going up the river. You've got Coast Guard Academy, obviously. You got the submarine base. The amount of investments that we've done at the base, all the pier work, that's $70 million for Pier 32. That's could be $100 million in magazine development. And then you just keep going up the river, and you got Montville and Gateway, and then Cashman Dredging, and then Business Park North. I think it's called Occam. I can't remember the name that they changed. But then if you just think of yourself as a wagon wheel, and you go out, just think of all the different ways that you can economically develop just to support the blue economy. And you just need to spell it out. It's such a refreshing way to think about our region and what we can do, and we can make it here. So I can give it to DECD.
Absolutely. That's, of course, the state's new slight motto, which is going down very well. The final question I want to put to you, Paul, is that $64 million question. Where do you see it happening? You know, where do you see all this going in 5 years? Everything's moved so fast. I mean, you said 2 years in the last 2.5 years that you've been, things have changed dramatically. And of course, that was off the back of a pandemic. So it's good to see sort of like business and everything happening, you know, based on that. Where do you, or what do you want to see possibly happening in the next 5 years?
You know, one of the things that we identified in our economic development strategy was the fact that a lot of the municipalities in these smaller ones in rural areas, the capacity to be able to apply for different things is just not there. And I'd like to see Sector as part of that, building that capacity so that these municipalities can you know, apply for different grants. I mean, we were just talking about a port infrastructure development grant that you can get from the federal government. You know, it's in a distressed community that probably doesn't have the capacity to write the grant in the first place or to team with the developer that wants to do that. I just see that there's a lot of opportunity for Sector to be able to do that. Now, that's being that said, you know, we need capacity as well. You know, and I think Sector has a lot of room that we can grow. And that's obviously working with the state and also with the federal government, more with the state than anybody else.
Well, Paul Whitescarver, Executive Director of Southeastern Connecticut Enterprise Region Sector, thanks for explaining and helping us understand Sector a little bit more. And hopefully people are out there listening and certainly in businesses, no matter how big or small, will be running to your door or looking at your website, or even hopefully watching the video as well and helping to get themselves you know, into business a bit more. And also Paul Lavoie, the state's Chief Manufacturing Officer, thanks for sharing your insight with us as well. Up to you both, gentlemen. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Brian.
Yep, thanks, Brian.
And if you're a business in the Southeastern Connecticut Council of Governments region, then visit Sector's website to see what grants, loans, and resources may be available to you at Sector, that's SECTER.org. And maybe you can also apply to the new Connecticut Wind Collaborative as well, which is based at Sector's offices in Groton, to see if you can become part of the new offshore wind supply chain in the region. Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Reality Interactive, helping Fortune 500 businesses connect with their customers through innovative digital tools to help foster strong relationships and deliver data-driven seamless solutions. We help you create memorable digital experiences to bring your brand to consumers in insightful ways. Find out how we can help your digital transformation today at RealityEye, that's RealityEye.com. Thames at Mitchell College, a college transition program on Mitchell's waterfront campus in New London. Mitchell offers a culture of radical possibilities where students with learning or processing differences can thrive, easing into college with supportive faculty and a strong social network. Within this tight-knit living and learning community, Thames students build executive functioning skills, earn college credit, learn strategies for independence, and experience transformative growth. Learn more at Mitchell.edu. And
it's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people, offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
The Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling is a nonprofit organization which, through advocacy, prevention, and education, is here to support individuals and families who are impacted by problem gambling. Our helpline, 1-888-789-7777, is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also have live chat and tech support through our website, www.ccpg.org.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. State Senator Kathy Austin didn't mince her words with Garrett Ucolito, the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, at a recent Transportation Committee public hearing. Ucolito was giving testimony about several bills the department are proposing for legislative approval. One of the bills, called HB 5330, is wide-ranging, covering environmental hearings, bicycle traffic, reckless driving, and public transportation in the state. It was on the subject of public transport that caught Austin's criticism.
DOT, and not you in particular, but the administration made it their thing to take away Shoreline East. They used to have some 30 trains, and now we're down to 16. We're never going to build it back up if we can't get standard rail service. People can't count on it, so they find another way to travel.
Austin said she felt the eastern part of the state was under attack from the Lamont administration and raised another concern over affordable housing and how tax credits for this had also been denied to the region, a point that was also raised by local Republican State Senator Heather Summers at a recent legislative breakfast held by Electric Boat.
I have a question about Shoreline East and tax credits for housing. I think the Eastern Connecticut delegation in the legislature may have different viewpoints than perhaps the administration, but we would like to see increased Shoreline East. We feel that if we could increase that, it might be a better way for people to be able to commute to Electric Boat, and tax credits for housing in Eastern Connecticut.
On the public transportation front, Ucolito pointed out the legislator had agreed in the last budget to $9 million for expanded bus services in southeastern Connecticut, and that CTDOT were currently working on this with a local bus provider to provide more buses and routes, especially for large employers like Electric Boat, as well as a new bus terminal in the city of Norwich. Ucolito did not, however, comment on the affordable housing tax credit issue. Students at Eastern Connecticut State University found out firsthand the dangers of the opioid epidemic, both locally and nationally, recently at an opioid symposium held at the school. Anne Mahoney is the state's attorney for the Windham Judicial District and told students trying to prosecute their way out of the problem hasn't worked and needs them to make a difference in the future.
When you leave here and start your professional lives, whether you're physician's assistants, nurses, teachers, judges, therapists, lawyers, it's going to impact your life. And it will be important for you to think about these things very deeply, because we count on you as the next generation to do a better job of bringing together community and social connectedness so that people are not driven to use drugs.
The day-long event consisted of talks from experts who are on the front lines every day, as well as lawmakers and nonprofits that deal with addiction and substance use issues. Peter Canning is a 30-year EMT veteran in the state and was the keynote speaker, and said over the course of his career, he's changed his views about people with substance use issues.
I'd give the person naloxone, they'd wake up, and I would scold them. I would say, "What's wrong with you? You know, if you keep doing this, you're going to end up dead or in jail. You know, just say no. I thought that people who use drugs had a character flaw, and it was their fault that they were in the position that they were at. I didn't understand how somebody could inject themselves with a drug that could possibly kill them.
Canning said many of the drug overdoses that are reported in the state and the nation are, in fact, drug poisonings due to street drugs being cut with substances like fentanyl that are 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times stronger than morphine. In 2022, around 110,000 people in the U.S. died from a drug overdose, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Military veterans in Connecticut and across the nation who were exposed to dangerous and toxic chemicals while serving at home or abroad can now directly enroll in VA healthcare without first having to apply for benefits. The new rules took effect on March 5th and are an expansion of the 2022 PACT Act. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal made the announcement at a press conference recently and had this message.
It is simple justice. Men and women who serve our country, who are exposed to these kinds of toxic chemicals, suffer from cancer, hypertension, heart disease as a result, no matter when it manifests, should have this benefit. And they should have it without having to go through the VA benefits procedure. They should have direct access to health care.
Blumenthal also urged all veterans, wherever they are, to take advantage of the new benefit and visit their local VA healthcare facility to get screened. He also had a direct and blunt message to the VA itself.
Better get it right. I love the good intentions. The announcement is wonderful. But the staff has to be available to handle the burden. And it is a burden on the VA, make no mistake. Already 500,000 veterans have enrolled in the program as a result of PACT. So to the VA, get it right.
Veterans who served as far back as Vietnam can apply, and even those who were not in war zones but based in the U.S. but suffered some form of exposure. Veterans should contact their local VA office or representative for further details. And the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities has announced the creation of the 119K Commission on At-Risk and Disconnected Youth, a statewide coalition of leaders on a mission to get 60,000 at-risk young people back on track. The commission will hold its first meeting later in March and hold regular monthly meetings until October, when it hopes to present a comprehensive strategy for dealing with the problem. The announcement of the 119K Commission continues the work done during CCM's five regional forums last fall that were held to promote awareness of the crisis affecting young people in Connecticut aged between 14 to 26 who are at risk or disconnected from education or employment. The initiative hopes to develop solutions in response to the report CT's Unspoken Crisis, Getting Young People Back on Track, commissioned by the Dalio Education and authored by Boston Consulting Group, which revealed the state had around 119,000 young people who are falling through the cracks in various systems here in the state. And Connecticut's home care workforce could see improvements in their pay and benefits if a new three-year deal is ratified by the General Assembly during the 2024 legislative session. Governor Lamont announced that his administration has submitted to the General Assembly a new three-year deal reached between the Connecticut Personal Care Assistance Workforce Council and the SEIU District 1199 Union of New England. The historic agreement, if passed, will raise minimum pay rates for home care workers up to $23 per hour, giving the state's almost 12,000 direct caregivers more financial stability. The agreement also seeks to provide longevity bonuses of between $400 and $800 to help retain caregivers but also to grow the industry. It will also provide two additional paid holidays and expand time off, as well as expand health care premium assistance for those who fall outside of the state's Husky Medicaid system, providing affordable health care through Connecticut's Healthcare Exchange Access Health CT. The deal would also support career development through voluntary training options and tuition reimbursement with a training fund of $750,000. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.